to the Piedmont Police and Board, especially your Stadler and your colleagues. Let me firstly upfront apologize for us being late. Some of the whoops, most of us, this committee has had a lot of whoops, and we've been held up in the whoops committee meeting, the whoops meeting. So we must apologize sincerely. Let me welcome you here for this briefing. I think we should have had it before the debate, but the debate is gone, but I think we still need this. As soon as members have settled, I will ask them to introduce themselves and then maybe allow you just to introduce yourself and then continue with the briefing, because we've lost some time. Let me start to my left, for the first member right here, Bill Leroux, if you could just start introducing.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Willem Leroux from the Eastern Cape.
I'm Dirk van Meijer from the Northern Cape. I'm Darryl Worth from the Free State.
I am Hoshi Machupa Machivela Mahona Mubena from the Board.
There's always status to thank you for all this. I myself, I'd like always to be lost. I'm Novello Mac, representing the Western Cape. Our honorable chairperson, Mr. Sicheka, is busy in a political, very urgent meeting with the national leadership. And he asked me just to sit in or stand in for him. We have one member who just assisted me with my pronunciation, the Honorable Kirsten Tooley. It's much easier for me to pronunciate his name. He's from KwaZulu-Natal. I don't want to disturb him with speaking, as he's very hungry. And just another member that has entered, Dr. Van Heerden. Yeah. He's from Free State. Then we have with us, next to me is the committee chair, secretary, Moss Manelli. And right down at the bottom, we have the son of this committee, young son, young lion, Mukwena, Mr. Mukwena. We've always wondered if there was any relation, but I think in the past meeting there was some clarification from the Honorable Hoshi Mukwena on the relationship. I think we have, right at the bottom there, we have Mr. H. We call him Mr. H. He does some of our, he's responsible for some of these niceties and a lot of logistics for the committee. PMG, we have our parliamentary monitoring group also here. I see we also have, this cluster is very wide. Besides local government, all of us are also members of the safety and security cluster. So we have Grace here, Gracie. She's let me introduce her. She's a secretary for safety and security. And we have Ayanda. She's a secretary for the chairperson, safety and security cluster, Hoshi Mukwena. So we have, and we have right at the bottom, secretary for Mrs. Florence Nayanda, the honorable member, sick, and she is at home, recovering, as we heard now, that she's recovering well. Then I'll leave over to you, Professor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm also a bit in the same position as you. I must apologize on behalf of our chairperson of the board, Dr. Malukoti, who, with reasons, cannot be here today. So I'm representing the board as a member of the board and also on the executive committee. On the far left is Mr. Hilary Munari, the manager of the board, who will make the presentation. And next to you is Mr. Nick Lejeje, our financial officer, and he will also be speaking to you and pertaining to our financial statements. I must apologize on behalf of the board that you were only receiving the documentation this morning. We were actually constrained in time, having received your invitation to come today to Cape Town on Friday. So it would be preferable that you received the documentation that and the draft report that we've submitted here. That is the best we could do. As you will see, it's a draft report. The Auditor General's report is outstanding. That would be forthcoming. Without further ado, let me then introduce and hand over to my colleague, Mr. Munari, just to take you through our presentation, and then I'll take questions with assistance of Mr. Munari and Mr. Lejeje on questions that you may raise. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Professor Stadler. Honorable members, I think it would be fine if we go right into the presentation, seeing that we've lost some time already. Okay. Thank you. You can continue.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Professor Stadler. As Professor has already said, we have now today the Fed plan and the draft annual report as well. This chairperson, honourable members, is the overview. I hope that's legible. Is the overview of our presentation this morning. What I'm going to do is, after talking briefly about the board, I will spend a bit of time on our last briefing to this committee, which was on the 8th of May and last year, just to recap on the issues coming up from last year. I will then go on to give an overview on our performance in terms of the mandate of the board. Here, we'll be dealing back-to-back with performance in the financial year that just ended on the 31st of March 2008, as well as the way forward in terms of our medium-term strategy. The Chief Financial Officer will then take over and take the committee through the finances, and here he will in the same manner deal with the board's finances in the last financial year that just ended and budget program going forward as outlined in terms of our medium-term strategy for the MTF period. And then I'll come back at the end and deal briefly with the conclusion. So that's really how we'll deal with the presentation this morning. Now, just to talk briefly about the board, since the coming into office of this board, the current board, on the 1st of September 2004, the board comprises 9 members, and the chairperson of the board is the only full-time member. The chief executive, the manager, and accounting officer is in charge of the board administration, and he leads 4 operational clusters. We have 27 staff positions in the establishment, and we had at the end of March 2008 8 vacancies. We are 74% black, we are 47% female. And towards the end of the last financial year, we tabled a proposal with the board to restructure our organizational structure. The idea behind the restructuring, the proposed structuring, Chairperson, was to strengthen our staffing structure in time for the upcoming ward limitation process and beyond. And the board, I'm glad to say, did approve the proposed restructuring. Now, Chairperson, our last briefing, as I said, was on the 8th of May, to this committee was on the 8th of May, 2007. At that briefing, we confirmed the written explanations that we had made to this committee with in terms of the concerns and reservations that the committee has had in the past, and with respect to our expenditure, with respect to issues such as professional fees, office expense, staff remuneration. These issues have come up in the past, and these concerns, Chairperson, I will raise them again just to remind the committee, because they remain important vis-à-vis the oversight role of this committee, and we believe it is worthwhile that we keep raising them, Chair, to reassure this led committee that we remain conscious of these issues. We also addressed the concerns raised about the possibility that we were spending our money on things that are irrelevant to the mandate of the board, and we explained that to the committee and to how the details of what we spend our money on, in that regard, indicating those details in terms of the expenses, giving all the breakdown and a clear indication in terms of the professional fee. There was also our explanation on the escalation for the staff salaries, on board member remuneration and their travel and accommodation across the country. We explained that quite clearly. And if for any reason you still need the written copy, we are always willing to send it through again. Furthermore, we reported to this committee on our mandate, how we had performed at that time for the year ended the 31st of March 2007. And we also presented our medium-term strategy for the period 2007-08 and going on to 2010-11. Now, today, once again, we are going to talk to you, give you an overview of our mandate and how we have performed against that mandate with respect to a number of strategic themes that we have identified, as well as, of course, the way forward, as I said earlier, for the medium-term period 2008-09 to 2011-12. You'll remember that we keep updating our set plan every year as we move forward. Now, these things are listed on the slide, Chairperson. The determination and redetermination of municipal boundaries, assessment of municipal capacity, review of district management area boundaries, alignment of service delivery boundaries, our relationship with key stakeholders, and good governance and organizational capacity. All those are strategic themes around which we perform and on which we report in terms of performance and progress. We will also present to you the budget, including, among other things, the receipts and expenditure for the last year, surplus reconciliation, the CFO will explain that, and budget program for the strategic and MTF period. Now, moving straight on into that first strategic theme, Chair, which is very, very central to what we do, the redetermination of municipal boundaries. We have been pursuing a program throughout the last financial year, the year that ended the 31st of March, with a program that would ensure that we finalize all the redeterminations cases by August 2008. The date of August 2008 is very important. You will see how that comes through as I go through the slides. The idea being that we can be able to hand over the boundary to the IEC to allow them to prepare for the 2009 national election and provincial elections, as well as the 2011 local government elections. Now, the program that we have been pursuing has been based on those two assumptions that you see up there. The first assumption was that the next national and provincial elections will be held in April 2009. And the second assumption is that the next local government elections will take place in March 2011. And on that basis, we have that program that we are pursuing. Now, in order to succeed, we needed then to stop receiving all submissions in terms of boundary proposals on the 31st of March 2008, and indeed we did stop them. What we are doing now is just processing what we have going forward in order to reach the targets that I've just spoken about. day. Now, for the medium-term strategic period, we will continue to attend to all those cases with respect to changes to municipal boundaries. As I said, with a view to complete all changes by August and handing over. We'll continue to ensure that all legal requirements are complied with, and also to ensure that we are able to hand over, as I've just indicated. That's moving forward. Now, there are a number of important developments that I'd like to raise to put forward to you, that I think you should take note of. Firstly, the board, as a process of going towards this date in preparation for the election, went into a number of very important projects. The first one is that the board is currently in the process of redetermining the three secondary cities in the country, of Msunduzi, of Bartolo City, and Mangaung, into Category A municipalities, turning them into metros. That process is currently underway. We are pushing it forward with gusto to ensure that it goes through with everything else. Secondly, we are also dealing with the redetermination of the boundaries of the cities of Tshwane and Ekurhuleni, both of them in Gauteng, as well as the district of Metsweding and the two locals within Metsweding of Kongwini and Mokeng Tatayamani. The idea there is to divide the Metsweding district into the two metro boundaries, between the two metros, as such, which means that the Metsweding district will then be disestablished and will disappear from the map. Now, in pursuit of those issues, we have attended recently meetings hosted by the MEC for local government in the Free State and in KZN. And these meetings comprise stakeholders from affected districts, from the affected locals and other stakeholders as well, to deal with these issues, to hear people out on these very important issues. Now, the board has also confirmed several boundary changes, redeterminations, etc. And details of these, without wasting time, are in Circular 4 of 2008, which I trust you will have seen by now. We also received several proposals for the creation of new municipalities in many parts of the country. Many communities believe in that creating new municipalities as a means of addressing specific problems, and the board turned them all down. The board made an express opinion that we don't believe that creating more municipalities will necessarily be effective to specific problems. And we have now been pleading with MECs in several provinces for them to issue Section 23 notices with respect to the redetermination. You will remember, Chairperson, that the MEC has to issue this notice in order to determine the effective date of a boundary change. Such notices are still outstanding in several cases, and we are pleading with them. And in this regard, with you being in touch with the MECs, we will plead for your support in getting the MEC to issue those notices. They are very, very important. These are the timelines we are waiting in with as we prepare for the two elections that I mentioned, the 2009 and the 2011 elections. You will see that these timelines provide for the finalization of outer boundaries, once again, as I said, by August 2008. We are hoping that the National Minister for Community and Local Government will publish the formula for the number of councillors in March 2009. Remember that the Minister has to publish the formula that will determine the number of councillors in order for the board to can get into the process of redelimiting ward boundaries in preparation for the 2011 local government elections. And we are here saying that it would be best if the Minister publishes that formula in March 2009. We are also hoping that the MEC for Local Government, once the Minister has published, will also determine and publish the number of councillors also during March 2009. And if that can happen, then it would put us in good stead, in good timing to then kickstart our process of delimiting the world boundaries for 2011 and hand over to the IEC for them to do the preparation. We now move over to another area of work, the assessment of municipal capacity. This is an annual project that we undertake with the purpose, Chairperson, of advising MECs for local government to ensure equitable and sustainable service delivery as far as possible. We advise MECs and they use the information, therefore, to make crucial decisions. Now, the process, as I've said before, is very well defined. It comprises work on the questionnaires, moving through to selection, deployment of personnel to every municipality. There's not one municipality we don't visit on a yearly basis. And we collect data, we verify, we analyze, and we prepare and produce reports. It's a very well-defined process that we undertake. And then, without fail, Chairperson, in the last year, 2007-08 assessment, we once again had 100% return of questionnaires from all the districts and all the locals, the all 46 and all the 231 locals. In December 2007, we produced and sent out the MECs, the 46 district reports with our recommendations. These were followed by the 9th provincial report in February 2008. And the national report in March 2008. For the first time, you will remember that we launched formally our national report on the 18th of March 2008, and we are pleased to say that the report was well received. And by the way, thank you for your support in that regard. We move on, okay, still on the capacity assessment, Chairperson. Looking going forward in terms of the medium-term strategy, we'll go through the same process. And we don't see the need at this stage to change the way we should do things. It was thought of very carefully, and we believe it works very, very well. Now, in pursuance of this objective, the executive committee of the board will in fact be meeting tomorrow on the 25th of June to hear presentations and to interview the top 5 leaders. Now, this is following a process internally by management where there was an adjudication on the bid, and there was a selection afterwards of the top 5 bidders. These are the bidders that the executive committee, and Professor Faisal is a member of that committee, will be talking to the top 5 bidders to ultimately select the service provider that will provide the service. It is also important to note, for this committee to note, Chairperson, that while we do this project on an annual basis, we are also involved in work with National Treasury, with FSA and other stakeholders in government, because we're trying to find better ways of data collection to standardize questions for use by other departments and institutions, and to reduce the questions that go to municipalities every year, because we are quite aware of this questionnaire fatigue that municipalities experience. And we are working. It is a lot of work, but we haven't given up. We are still working on that. Moving to another area, Chairperson, the review of DMAs. You'll remember that originally we had this DMA as part of policy to declare deserts and semi-arid areas and other state protected and conservation areas of DMAs because they couldn't work as local municipalities. Subsequently, the board has reviewed this policy, and at the time, and that was before the last local government elections, the board said that only national parks and international of significance would be left as DMAs. All the other areas would then be, the declarations would be withdrawn, and they would become part of the locals. As a result of that, we had a number of declarations before the last election, local government elections, being withdrawn, and these areas became part of local government or local government local municipality. After the elections, then the board went back and reviewed the future of DMAs again, and the work continued. We released a report for comment in July 2007, and in October of the same year, we published notices and to withdraw the declaration. I must say that the comments that came through were quite robust, and we had a lot of input from all stakeholders in that regard. And the notices then went in October 2007 to withdraw the declaration. As we said in that July 2007 document, Chairperson, the board's preference has always been that all DMAs should be withdrawn, and that they should become part of a category of municipality. And we pointed out a number of advantages to that. Those are listed on that slide. Firstly, they will result in the full territory of the Republic being covered by locals. We will no longer need a separate electoral system for the DMAs, which is very advantageous. We will also minimize or get rid of the service delivery confusion around the DMA issue. The issue of the individual powers and functions has been very confusing in the DMA situation. That will be gotten rid of. There will be some special stability at municipal level, and the confusion around the boundaries of the conservation areas vis-à-vis the boundaries of DMAs, that will also be laid to rest. In that we'll now have only local municipalities throughout the country, districts, and we'll have our system of local government in that manner. Now, a lot of progress has been made. The board has approved that we publish Section 81.5 notices to confirm those boundaries where DMAs have not been included into the local municipalities, and we are still waiting for the MECs to publish Section 23 notices. Also, I must say the IEC has also published all the Section 23 notices as well. That's also something that must still happen. Now, Chair, this and the next slide outline the timelines for the finalization of the DMA, the withdrawal thereof. You will see that it is quite in line with our boundary finalization as well, the target still being the August 2008 handover to the IEC. We are now at the stage where we have finalized the incorporation of these DMAs into local municipalities. I've said already that the board has approved that we publish Section 21.5 notices. And as I've already said, August 2008 is the golden time that we are pursuing to hand over to the IEC. The IEC are very particular that we don't venture beyond that time, because we then disturb their preparation. Another area of work we are doing, Chairperson, service delivery boundaries, the alignment thereof with municipal boundaries. We have been doing a lot of work with the Department of Justice and SAPS. We had plans to terminate our involvement in this project in the last financial year. However, the Department of Justice made a request for us to continue to support them. So we will continue, therefore, to support them on a need-to basis. And at the same time, we will be working on a comprehensive database of these aligned administrative and functional boundaries moving forward. But our involvement in terms of assisting the municipality and the department will be on a need to basis, because we winding down in that regard. And that's because the Department of Justice have not yet finalized those boundaries, and they need our assistance. May I also point out, Chairperson, and that's not on the slide, we continue to work on a very important project to get a set of credible TA boundaries across the land. It's a very important project. It's led by the DPLG. We are taking part in that. We'll continue with this project in the medium-term strategic period. And we will, of course, continue to engage the key stakeholders in that regard. Moving on, Chairperson, we have interacted quite extensively with our stakeholders, and those are just some of the interactions that we have had. The Department of Justice and SACS, I've already spoken about that. We are continuing to work with those departments, DPLG, Land Affairs, Water Affairs and Forestry, creating the credible TA data set. The Chairperson addressed the South Africa Strategic Planning Session. We have also worked with Steph SA with SALGA on a number of projects and initiatives as well. Those are very important to us, and we'll continue to build on them in order to build and manage these relationships in order to facilitate the coordination between our stakeholders. Very, very important for us to continue. Internally as well, Chairperson, we have been engaged in a number of projects to improve our system internally. It is important to note that these cannot be one-off processes. They have to happen on a continuous basis. And we work robustly to try to improve all the time from year to year. Issues of risk management, issues of internal controls, budget controls, cash flow management, and so on. We can only improve in that regard. And as I said, we have to continue working at it, and we can't stop, and it's something that happens on a regular basis. Also, this area, Chairperson, organizational capacity and capability to ensure that we achieve our milestones in terms of our strategic plan. Our employees remain very important to make sure that we are able to have this reliable, robust, and responsive corporate system and to enhance the smooth running of the organization. Very, very important for us. Another thing that we cannot do once off, we need to keep on doing part of our day-to-day management issues. We'll continue to do that, Chairperson. We are striving for a culture of high performance in all employees. Not an easy task, but we will continue to pursue that. What you see here, Chairperson, and I'm about to stop now, is the election timetable, just with a little bit more detail in it, which outlines all the events that will happen as we move towards 2009. It started way back in December 2007. We are now at a stage where, as I've said, we have published our 1.5 notices. As we move on, we'll provide the boundaries to the IEC in August, and so on and so on. And it's also added in other areas of work that will be done by other bodies such as the IEC moving forward. You will see there that our assumption has come in there that the provincial elections and national elections will be in April 2009. And of course, at the same time, we continue with preparing for the first set of draft ward boundaries, and so on and so on. It's all in these slides. I will not go through all of them. Suffice to say that we have just outlined it based on the assumption that I spoke about earlier. And then, of course, culminating the local government elections in March 2011. And then, Chairperson, another important development that I'd like to bring forward here is that the current board, the term of the current board that is in office now, it expires on the 31st of January 2009. That's in a few months' time. Now, the process to select and appoint the new board has to start soon, so that the new board can come into office on the 1st of February, and that we don't have a gap in between the old one coming out and the new one coming in. And it's also ideal, as we say, that we have some interaction between the incoming and the outgoing board. And if that's going to happen, the selection must then have to happen very, very promptly, so that there is knowledge of how the new board looks like, for that interaction to then happen. We know that you have a role in that process, and we are putting this forward so that we are also aware of the need to move, and that will be kick-started by the DPRG, the inflation debt advert, we are saying the latest by September 2008, so that the process can start rolling to select the new board. At this stage, I will hand over to the Chief Financial Officer to take you through the finances.
Thank you. The majority of the income of the board is derived from the Department of Local, Provincial and Local Government. In the 2007-8 year, we received 20.6 million with other income basically made up of interest earned in banks and also other funding items. We do sell some items like MEPs on a cost recovery basis to boost our income, and the total being 21 million, just over 21 million. The next slide indicates the expenditure items as an overview. We show the 2008 compared to the 2007. I'll just highlight the key amounts there. If you look at our staff costs, it's 6.8 million, which contributes, which basically is 43% of our total expenditure this year. Although there is a decline from the 2007 year to the 2008, it's mainly attributable to vacancies during 2008. The key projects that the CEO was talking about on project expenditure, we've spent just over 4 million, which is 26% of our budget, and that is on our capacity assessment project. Continues to be a key project at the board. There's also some operating expenditure at 2.5 million, which includes rent and other administrative items. The finance costs that we put up there, 139,000, those are finance costs on a finance lease that we entered into. It is in no way interest incurred on overdraft or some sort. The total for the year, we achieved a surplus of 5.2 million, which we will detail in the next slide. As the CEO has mentioned, there was a concern about where we spend our money, so therefore we have made a breakdown of all of where we are spending money. Administrative expenses, we indicate the majority of our expenses is publications or notices. If you look on that slide, there is a credit basically indicating that there was an income of 1.7 million. During the year, there was a reversal of a provision. This is basically just an accounting entry, and we'll indicate it at this reconciliation going forward on the next slide. The next slide indicates staff costs. That's 6.8 million broken down into staff salaries, members in monuments, and also our contributions at 186,000. Project expenses, again, we are indicating the 4 million on capacity assessment. On the next slide, the major expense on other operating is our travel and subsistence, which is mainly due to traveling with our consultation processes, public hearings, and other board business. Rent is also a major contribution at just over 900,000. As I indicated before, we wanted to assure the committee that the board has spent the funds appropriately this year. Although we've reported a surplus, we wanted to indicate how the surplus was came about. Our reported expenditure for the year is 15.7 million. And I indicated that there was, in preparation of financial statements, we do make critical estimates and judgments. And in 3 years ago, there was an estimate of 2.4 million on commitment obligations which could not be verified by the service provider, so we made that estimate. Subsequently, we've readjusted and made another estimate to adjust that 2.4 million, so therefore we reversed the 2.4 million. In essence, we've therefore spent 18 million this year, 18,198,000. In February, we then committed just over 2 million in research and investigations, tenders or processes, and also awareness campaigns. So therefore, the total expenditure for the year is 20.2 million, which translates to just at 98% of the allocation from the Department of Provincial and Local Government. In this slide, we indicate our budget programs during the medium-term expenditure framework. In the current year, we have received a grant of 25.4 million, of which in our planning sessions we have duly allocated those amounts in various clusters, and the funds are optimal to pursue the mandate of the board. However, as we move over to the 2009-10 and 2010-11, we see that the National Treasury has allocated us 34,801,000, whereas we, according to our planning sessions, we require 53.8 million. That is the 65% shortfall in terms of our needs in that year. A further 2% variance in the 2010-2011 year. This is due to the WAD limitation process, which will be following in those years. And in that way, if you look at just the WAD limitation process itself, it will cost about 28.3 million in 2010, and then in 2011 just over 10 million. So we need to engage. We're in the process of engaging the National Treasury to ensure that they do review and give us more funds for those years. In the 2011-12 financial year, which is not on the slide there, we, according to our planning sessions, we require 29.5 million, of which is out of the scope of the MTF, and we'll see in this year when the process comes through. Thank you.
Just to conclude, just to confirm that we have been overwhelmingly successful in achieving the number of applicants and investigations. We have once again been able to get our mandate with us today. We have stopped receiving submissions on the 31st of March 2008. Our work at the board on all those areas, on the determination review of DMA, allowing us to give the boundaries, they play a significant role in ensuring that the country will be ready for the national and provincial elections in 2009 and the local government elections in 2011. There is also another important process, the need for us to align with the white paper process that is being pursued by the DPRC. Now, at this stage, it is not clear to us what the outcome of that process is going to be. So, whichever way it comes, there is hope, and we've been saying that it must not upset the way in which things have been rolling at the moment. It is very difficult to determine exactly what the outcome will be in that regard. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Is there anything you would like to add, Professor Stegler?
Yeah. Perhaps just the last point is obviously the white paper process on local government, the review of the white paper process may have a number of consequences, and obviously one will have to see how that's going to fit in with a pretty tight time schedule in terms before the 2011 local government election. So the element of uncertainty for all of us, how that white paper process is going to produce and what legislative changes and whether, if at all, it will affect our work. So that is a thing that we'll have to see this year and next.
Thank you very much, and thank you for coming on the short notice. we appreciate that, and even though we've received this late, we thank you for the commitment. But allow me just to welcome our MEC, Mafareka from FreeStack, and the head of Department for Local Government and Housing. I have to manage time very efficient today. I have you down for 11:30. But that's the time that was given to me. So that leaves us with about an hour for questions. And I don't want to deprive the members of asking any questions or limiting them. So if you are ready, I will open the floor. Members, for questions. Can I see those hands, please? Mm-hmm. Let me start. Seems that all members want to ask questions. Let me start right from who's last? Mr. Van Heerden, the Honorable Van Heerden. And then we can come up in that order. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm just going to ask two questions. The one is the assumptions for the local government election in March 2011. More or less, I see a notice from the submission that you actually planned everything on that day. If there is a change in the date, is that going to, of course, going to impact one way or another on your planning in the first place? Second place, I take it that you need to have a particular date in order to plan. How certain are you that more or less 2011 will be the date for the next municipal election? Then the second question is regarding the Mangaung now also becoming a metro. What factors do you apply to determine which areas become a metro or which not? What was the convincing argument in respect of Mangaung becoming from the Free State? Like Mr. Mafareka here, I'm interested in knowing, you know, what factors moved you to consider Mangaung also.
Thank you. That's the Honorable Van Heerden. I'll handle all of them, but I'm just giving the name for reference. In that order.
Yeah, thanks, Jefferson, for this opportunity. No preamble, straight to question.
Mm-hmm.
Your proposal for to create a new municipality were denied. Based on the challenges that we're having in many of our municipalities, in terms of capacity and service delivered, don't you think we have to review some of these things? Because in some instances, you find a particular village falling in a municipality, but that is linked with some villages that are way far away from that particular village. In one instance, to find a village A will be linked with village B, which will pass many villages before it is linked with another village. Don't you think we have to review some of these demarcations? Number two, just to appreciate that the DMAs will now will form part of local municipalities. Because this was then it was five, but this was not this was not on. Now, on slide 14 on performance and assessment of municipal capacity, you have outsourced some of the projects. We'll be glad to know which projects were outsourced specifically, and how much are we spending for those projects that are outsourced? Were they tangible and calling reasons? Why were they outsourced? Vacancies. In this committee, we are we got this allergy by department who always have these vacancies. This allergy. Can you unpack your plan on how to address this? Because there's news from other departments about these vacancies. They will say, no, it's because we don't have skilled people to can fill those positions. And we'll get the same reasons for 3 or 4 consecutive years. The question is, what are you doing if you can't even fill these vacancies for so many years? Now, can you unpack your plan as to what are you intending to do? Let me jump from the chapter and go to finances. There was a concern from the Auditor General about some of the activities in the board. Without going to specific, they know what I'm talking about. What plans are there to correct some of the things that were identified by the AG? How effective is your internal audit committee? Without going deep, Chairperson, you said in that slide, other income or other source of income. And you don't specify which ones are those, where they come from, what kind of amount is that? Because we're trying to avoid a department or a unit that will get some funding from some drug lords, you know, where they ask you to get some funding from some drug lords and some other illegal activities. This committee has got this allergy about this. You know, we don't want that. So can you tell us, don't just say other income. We don't even specify which ones are those. Finally, Chairperson, consultation fees. Hey, this amount is too much. What is it for? What are the fees there? Can we try to unpack it? Specifically, what are you talking about there? Chairperson, if I had time, I was going to talk about the rentals, buildings. The kind of money that they are spending on rentals, Chairperson, can they really tell us? Are there no other methods of trying to curb this kind of expenses? Because the kind of money that they are paying on rentals, it's alarming, Chairperson, it's too much. It's too much. Now, I want to count years. The years when they were using this fund on rentals. Let's give them only 10 years, Chairperson. You count the money that they're spending as to how much would that be in 10 years' time. Chair, I've got other questions, but in respect to what that advice said, I must not ask more than 6 questions. And I asked only these few because I respect what you said. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you. That's Honorable Khosi Mokoena, just for reference. I'm just wondering if I have a deputy chair. Our next member is Mr. Honorable Wiff.
Thanks, Chair. Seeing I'm also from the Free State for a starter, I want to carry on a little bit where Dr. Van Heerden left off. I live in Mangaung, which comprises Botshabelo, Tabantu area, and I know they've been trying for many years to eventually be declared a metro. I know there's certain criteria to become a metro, but there's a certain number of population and income. But, of course, I hope part of it is, this is just a comment, I've got to be very careful with Mr. Mafareka here, is the administration, and I'm very worried about that, because at one stage it's just had their budget presented, they had an expenditure of 11 million more than the income, and property values, as I suppose, in other municipalities have been increased by threefold, and I suppose they're hoping to pull this through, so I just hope that the administration and finances are also included in that criteria. Other thing I'd like to come back is DMAs, district municipalities. We got one that's very problematic in the Free State, that's Gariep municipality, which I think there are three municipalities falling within that. As far as the councillors are concerned, and just coming back to this specific example, I think at a stage they were spending about 70% of the amount of money allocated to them paying salaries, wages, salary bills. How do you going to incorporate, let's say for example there were 10, there's three municipalities make up Gariep, and there are 10 district municipality councillors. So are you just going to split them and divide them in, or are you going to make the actual wards or the proportional councillors more or less? How are you going to accommodate that? Is it necessary really to have so many councillors then in that area, seeing that the salary is so, you know, it's a relatively poor area, agricultural, low-income area? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member Van der Merwe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think most of the people covered me. My question is, you know, the demarcation board, when they make wards and cut municipalities into wards and so, where's the problem, as my previous colleague said? Here's a city with so many councillors. But a place about 30, 40 kilos from there has been cut into this municipality. And it makes it very difficult for service level. And another thing that we have in Sol City, Sol Plaatje, was there's a ward completely south of the city. There's two wards in between. Another piece of this one, say ward one is south of the city, and two and three is in between. And a piece of the of ward one is on the other side of ward two and three, on the completely on the north side of it. And there's only 200 voters in this small piece that they cut into there. In front of ward on this side, to the other side is about 10 kilos or 8 kilos. And if you write to the demarcation board about this problem, you're not even getting answers. Why are they doing it? And that is one of my questions. And the other question is, if they include the district municipalities into the municipalities, will it make a difference in the grading of that municipality where they take that EMA?
Thank you very much, Honorable LaRue.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I also want to touch on the question of the metros, and I live in the Nelson Mandela Metro in the Eastern Cape, and it's obviously not working. It's two-wheely. We've got three large towns in this metro, and what is actually done is divided the towns, because the strongest member of the metro is getting all the advantages. So you've got this bickering between the cities now. What was interesting to me is when the CEO said, we're following the route to metros with gusto. If you can explain why are you following the route with gusto, and I'd like to know that. And secondly, we've had some major protests where we've had boundary changes.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to know, how does the process actually work to decide on the boundary changes, and what sort of checks and balances are you building in to stop major protests where the population clearly does not want the boundary change? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, the Honourable Ms. Kirsten Tooley.
Some of the questions have been asked, but maybe I'll want to more clarity on some. The way I want to find out first, you said on the 31st March, it was the cut-off date of the submission. I want to find out how many political parties have submitted. or I will say plus has Parliament been given an opportunity, I mean have they submitted anything including legislation? Number two, it's whether the marches and protests have an impact in these delimitations of boundaries. It will be like I would like to extend Hoshi's question about the consultant. I thought the board members are consultant because it's not a permanent thing. You just call the people who've got an expertise. As board members, you still go and look for the consultant. Because I was thinking that the way the board is composed, it's people who've got that relevant expertise for that particular job, for that particular period. Now you see they are consultant. It means that you've got board members assembled, and then they go out and look for consultant. I want you to elaborate on that. Last but one is I want to check or to find out from you the areas added to Metro. You know that when we were establishing Metro, there were areas who were left out and then eventually they were included. Is there any improvement to those areas compared to those who are not included in the metros? I hope you know why I'm asking that, because we want to check whether it's an advantage to be added into the metro, and then if it's an advantage, why don't we have all metros? And lastly is the competence which has been performed, or the competences of the district, which have been, which we are going to do away. Who's going to take over? Is it? Are we going to have agencies, or is going to be given to the local authorities or local government authorities? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chris. Just two questions from myself, and you will notice most of our questions of members are from your constituencies or from your province. The NZOP, we represent our province, and the Free State seems to be come out very vocally today. I wonder how their rugby are doing. My question would be also my concern on the incorporation of the DMAs. Even in the Western Cape, I'm from the Western Cape, you have the small little town, Maritzburg. The town is 90 kilometers from Graaf Reinet. It's 140 from Beaufort West, but the DMA is incorporated into the Beaufort West local municipality. And it just doesn't make sense. For this vast distances. The same we experience with VDs. You have in Beaufort West the VD of a small town, Nelspoort, as many people know. And then the next VD is Merwewe, which is almost 200 kilometers and on a 120 kilometer bad gravel road. And in between you have Beaufort West. You have Nelspoort on the south, northern side of Beaufort, and you have Merwewe on the far western side of Beaufort. So you have a huge town in the center and these two VDs of one ward outside, so far apart. And it really, service delivery for the local municipality to service those small little towns out. I just don't know how the demarcation there works. And if you have looked at this, the other concern will also be the public participation in establishing these these boundaries. How much is there? We, as some member has mentioned, even we've been taken to court as government, and there's still processes in that is going on with people that are not satisfied about the whole demarcation and the cross-boundary municipalities that we know from. I would also like to, maybe we should know, if you request from us to notify MECs or to speak to MECs that haven't issued the 23 notices, Section 23 notices, who are they, so that we can speak to those that are really, that we need to speak to. Don't speak to those who have already submitted. And then also this request from you, to send us through all those documents that you mentioned that you have left behind. I think it was still the demarcation issue with the upcoming elections and even the future local government elections is going to be very important to us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I will answer these questions best as I can, and if I can't, I'll ask for expertise next to me. The first one is, Yerden, Honourable from Yerden, the assumption of the local government election. We work from a five-year cycle as the Constitution requires, so 2006, March, 5 years, March 2011. So obviously, the key player in preparation for elections is the IEC. We actually a bit of a precursor to the IEC in order to give them municipal boundaries, which they then appoint municipal electoral officers and so forth. So we are coming early in the picture, but any changes really impact on the IEC and their preparation. The Mangahung, why Mangahung? It was at the first time in 2000, the demarcation then was viewed by the board as an aspirant metro, not quite meeting the criteria set out in the Section 4 of the Structures Act, which requires conurbation, high density of interaction between the various parts, various different industrial, commercial, and residential areas, the necessity for a single integrated development plan. So there are set criteria that we've used. Now, when we looked at the three largest or the secondary cities, three cities really emerged, the so-called secondary cities, and they are all part of the city's network. There are nine cities part of the city's network, the three metros, plus Mangahung, Buffalo City, and Mthunduzi. And so we could assess that Mangahung is not a Johannesburg, but is much closer to Nelson Mandela, in the sense of size, in terms of the production to the GDP, about 2% of the national GDP is Bloemfontein, is Mangahung. Similar, 2.7 is Nelson Mandela. So there's a close proximity to the Nelson Mandela as a metro rather than the Johannesburg, Tshwane, or Durban, or Cape Town. Another important issue of a metro is why metros? Why have we made in the legislation the different between metros and other areas? It's basically to deal with urban areas. And we have a process of strong urbanization. Bloemfontein, Mangahung is showing something like 15% increase in growth over the past 5 years, which shows that is the result of a strong process of urbanization taking place. Now, what's the value of a metro is no magical word to the notion of a metro. It is simply a single-tiered municipality where all the powers in Schedule 4 and 5B, 4B and 5B of the Constitution is exercised by one municipality. And that's the only difference between
a metro and a local and a district, where the district and the local shares power. And that sharing of power has got immense problems. And there's difficulties how to have almost a fourth layer of government operating. And this is part of the white paper review process, is looking about the functionality of a district and the reasoning and the value added by having a split, a two-tier local government system. So where a municipal area within established boundaries can operate as a metro because they meet the criteria of Section 4 of the Structures Act, then we say, yes, it would be advantageous for governance to manage urbanization to declare Mangaung as a metro. It's got a number of areas, Botshabelo, Sabantsu, Bloemfontein, and that functions as an integrated establishment. So Mangaung was not a difficulty to demarcate as that, and we had lots of support in the Free State from the Free State government. The MEC was at the meeting last Thursday, and their support from the municipalities plus the Free State provincial government. Khosi Mokwena, the question was whether new municipalities were denied to be created, and that may impact badly on, be a negative on service delivery. What we've found is that, particularly in the rural areas, is difficulty of service delivery, often because of lack of skills, and that further division of a municipality would in fact make them smaller and often more difficult to attract skills, more difficult to provide possible services. So the aim of the demarcation has been, as far as we can, to create viable municipalities. Comparatively speaking, South Africa has got one of the fewest number of municipalities, and the whole aim was to have at least economies of scale where a fairly sophisticated system must be implemented. One must also remember that municipalities have a tremendous task to comply with an enormous legal framework of the laws that they have to implement, the MFMA, the Structures Act, the Systems Act. All these require a fair amount of skill, technical skills, and so on. And so making very small municipalities, which will not have that skill, is creating more difficulties for service delivery. So we've looked at a number of cases. For example, the one is where two small municipalities have been merged in Northwest, because as individual municipalities they couldn't provide the services, and there was a quest from Northwest to examine the case. We examined it and said yes, this is a case of making sense to combine two municipalities. In KZN we've changed boundaries where one municipality couldn't service a considerable area, change boundaries and cut one piece off to give it to a more competent and capable municipality. So that's the main reason why what guides us in demarcating municipalities. Under DMAs, the philosophy behind the change in trying to incorporate disestablished DMAs was, in a DMA, a district municipality had to provide all services. So you had to create a district that could create in services in a very small area, and it was very expensive, and we thought often a duplication of services, so that the local municipality closest to where the DMA is located could in fact do that better. Just on the question of capacity, wonder Hilary if you want to, in terms of outsourcing our own capacity, if you want to answer that question.
Okay, let me do answer that.
Just your
mic.
Okay.
we outsource this project simply because of its enormousness. It is a very detailed and enormous process, which requires a lot of manpower on the ground and on getting the data that we need and also the reports that get to be churned out as a result. It would mean, if we were to do it all internally, that we would have to employ some 200 persons as part of our establishment. Remember what I said in saying that we visit each and every municipality and we would need knowledgeable persons, somebody who knows local government, to go in there, sit with the officials in the municipality, collect the necessary data, and come out of that municipality to continue with the process. So it's simply the issue of resources, the manpower. It would not be economic for us to have those people as part of our structure. So we then outsource it in order to employ the personnel that we need at the time that we need them, and at the other time that we don't need them, then they are not with us, and therefore we actually would spend a lot more on personnel if we were to try and do it all internally, because we would have to increase our structure quite substantially. The question here was that which areas the whole project is actually outsourced. We have a service provider who bids and is selected, and it is up to that service provider then to have secure the people that will go out, who are knowledgeable enough, that will go out, get the data and bring it back, and then that person must then come back and deliver to us what we need. We look at the quality of the product that comes through, we interact with it, we get regular progress reports, and we return and query issues why we are not happy with the product that comes through. So at the end of the day, Chairperson, just to say that it is the issue of just how enormous the project is. It is a big one, and that it would not be practical for us to do it entirely internally. We remain very active. Every year, our personnel as well do go out to that. So we know exactly what's happening with the project. We don't just completely rely without knowing what's going on in the project. Thank you.
Thank you. Just on the question of vacancies, which is allergy on vacancies, we are at the board just as allergic to vacancies as I'm sure this committee is. The difficulty with the board is a small organization to provide career paths for people who spend a couple of years, and then where do they move upwards if it's a small organization. So we try to do career path planning for members for staff members that they can grow within the organization. But clearly we are in a very competitive market, and so there has been a case that there is concerns, and the board takes it very seriously, the vacancies that do occur, and I think there were 8 at the end of the financial year. I don't know, Hilary, if you want to add something further on vacancies.
Thank you. What I can add to what Professor Stetler was saying is that we have a very definite plan on filling those vacancies. Let me just correct a point, that the vacancies that you see reflected here are not the ones that you saw. We saw the last time that we were here. They are not. And in fact, as of the 31st of March, we had 8. They have gone down at the moment. I'm not sure about the number, but they've definitely gone down. And there are processes underway. In fact, on Thursday of this week, we'll be interviewed for another position, which means that another vacancy going down. Mm-hmm. So we have a very definite plan of dealing with this as much as possible. Unfortunately, we cannot just stop it completely because people are on the move, and they're going to move whether we like it or not. But as Professor Stetler said, they're giving us a hard time. They're as allergic to the business as you are, and that gives us a hard time. We're always on the move whenever these vacancies do come up.
But we have to report on them very honestly on, at the same time. Thank you.
Could I ask the CFO to respond to the financial questions?
Thank you. First of all, I'd like to say that the board in the 2006-2007, we received an unqualified audit report. So there's been an improvement in terms of effective internal control systems at the board. The concerns that AG has raised in 2006-07 was, first of all, the copper resolutions that were not implemented. These were the IT, in terms of computer information systems, they had raised an issue that we didn't have an IT steering committee, which in this financial year we implemented that we have a committee in place which is overseeing the IT function. The other concerns were regarding the supply chain management issues, where there was some irregular expenditure relating to consultants, and we have improved on that. We have a supply chain management policy. In the previous financial year, we followed the proper procedures in appointing consultants, and there was no exceptions or queries from AG in that regard. The other issues were in terms of data recovery and backup, which we have subsequently have put in place a data recovery process, and that is fine now. The another item that AG had raised was going concern, which basically the AG was saying our liabilities exceed our assets. And eventually, I mean, we at the end of 31 March, management has tabled we have assessed our going concern, and we believe that the board will continue as a going concern. In terms of other income, the honourable member raised the issue about other income. The other income there's a breakdown of that in the annual report, financial statement note 6, which indicates that what that other income is. Another question was on rental, that our rental is high. In fact, we have looked at alternative options in the market. It is the lowest rent that we could get. We are based in Hatfield at the moment, but when we looked when we started looking for alternatives, the rent was what we are paying now is quite value for money. We are, however, have a problem with space, and we've been engaging with the Department of Public Works to give us to show us alternative offices. However, but the Department of Public Works backlogs the board buildings, and those buildings need to be renovated, and it can take 1 to 2 years. We've visited certain sites which at the moment we cannot take occupation of those, but we'll continue to look for other alternatives. That's all. Thank you.
The Honourable Stewart, just Mangahung, I think I explained our reasoning there. Again, what one must recall with Mangahung and the secondary cities, it is a very limited step that the board has taken, because technically, or de facto, Mangahung is operating as a single tier municipality. The district of Matayo is hardly giving any services in Mangahung. So basically, it's a confirmation of the status quo as a single tier, because Mangahung at the moment are performing most, if not all, the district functions in Mangahung. So nothing is going to change in your life living in Mangahung. There's no new service provider that's only going to give a service which has not been previously done. And it's always been a very difficult the existence of a secondary city within a district, because it's a very strong single
secondary city with a fairly weak district, and there was always very uncomfortable relations, not only among the Hun and Mateo, but in a number of other places as well. What's going to happen with the district of Mateo would then be disestablished, and it was a difficult district to start off with. It only consisted of three locals, among whom and two others, and the two others are going to be is going to be one is allocated to the north, and the other one is going to be allocated to Harit. Which brings to the second question: is the number of councillors in the district municipality? Those the board doesn't control. That is the formula that the minister must announce. And the very strange thing about them, this is why the district municipality, the DMAs didn't make sense, because you had a single member for a DMA, and that DMA could be 100 residents or 100 voters. While next door, you had the PR councillors in the district would be 5,000 and so on. So there was a great disparity, and that's why, from a democratic point of view, the disappearance of DMA would provide for better representation. So it's a question of the formula of the Minister of Provincial Government that determines it, plus the MEC that actually then announces the actual number. Following the formula, there's a bit of play, and the MEC in fact announces the number of district councillors. The Honourable Stefano Marva on the problem of wards and the process of consultation. The board has, I think, gone to great lengths to ensure a largely very participatory mode of ward delimitation. There's an initial draft that is published. There is a then consultations are held in terms of just simply the persons can respond to it. Then a second set is of ward delimitations are published, and then there are actual public hearings in each district. So there's a whole process that are done. We are a bit constrained in terms of the law that wards have to be more or less similar. There's only a 15% either way that we can do, and sometimes we get very odd wards because you have to, it's a little puzzle which is immensely difficult. So people will say, you know, do this, but if you do that, something jumps out there. It's like a puzzle patchwork quilt to get it right. And so we try our best to get it deep and with a full public consultation. And that process, and that takes almost 6 months, and that's why it's quite an extensive process, a lot of traveling, a lot of on the ground visits and consultation with the communities. The question whether a disappearance of a DMA and inclusion in a district, in a local, would that lead to a different grading? Very often not, because the DMA is a very scarcely populated area. It's a nature reserve. The locals are going to get half of the Kruger National Park. It's going to be no difference to the same. That may include their grading breadth. But on the whole, it won't make a major difference. It will simply simplify service delivery. So I think if I answer your questions on that. Mr. LaRue, on the Nelson Mandela, the large metros that we have is what I call really a bold experiment in South Africa and many other countries. Your metropolitan areas has been usually carved up in a number of small municipalities, then very great difficulties in coordination, things like transport, water, sanitation. And the model that we've adopted is rather to go large And there is a movement in the world which suggests that that is the way. But of course, bringing three areas in the National Mandela, the metro municipality, has got tensions there. But we think rather that larger one than carve up in smaller. But again, it's a question of did we receive any suggestions of carving up? We didn't. So it's not that we received any major complaint that our metro model is not working. We haven't seen a research on the ground which suggests it's too large. That hasn't come really through in either in academic literature or as complaints. So I think we feel it's still comfortable with the idea of rather go large, and we're going to see now in Tswana even getting larger. The whole idea of Gauteng is also for larger metros rather than smaller ones. So it's a question of how well can we manage those large areas. And then, of course, the challenge is the creation of participatory structures, sub-councils, as a measure to creating at least the linkage, because we're aware, and the law was written like that, that there must be possibilities of closer interaction of people with this large institution. I think everyone is very much aware of the sensitivity and the importance that boundaries have for individuals and communities' lives, and we see the protests. The protest is very much linked in the past to the cross-boundary municipalities. And there, the boundary changes was not the work of the board. It was provincial boundaries. And if you look at Marafong, that's a provincial boundary that changed. Makati Hill is a provincial boundary, and the board has got no jurisdiction over those. And that came out in the first Makati Hill decision by the Constitutional Court. And so it shows you the value of the board being an independent, impartial body to make decisions rather than making political decisions. So we are therefore very conscious of the impact that a board boundary change will have, and therefore go through a fairly elaborate boundary or public participation process. At the moment, the board's philosophy is stability. None of the changes of metro status affect a boundary at all. We've retained our current boundaries, and we believe that it's very important to have as far as possible a stability in boundaries, because it's very important for planning by municipalities and so forth. I hope I've answered your question, Mr. Ntuli. I think, Hilary, if you could answer the question whether by the 31st of March we receive any submissions from political parties.
Thank you, Chair. It's hard to say the number submission. Suffice to say that the vast majority of submission from political parties have been from the African National Congress. There are also a fair amount of submission from the IFP and the DA. I think those are the parties that one sees coming through. Has Parliament submitted? Not as Parliament. We haven't seen a submission say we come from Parliament as such. But political parties, all that in various structures, we have seen quite a bit. Thank you.
There was a further question on the why the board itself is not the consultant. The one answer to that would be is that the board functions as an oversight over the administration. It brings expertise, but on the documents prepared, in many cases we require detailed studies of people to visit to spend considerable time to prepare a report. and therefore one can appoint a board member to do that particular work, or use a consultant. So it may in fact come out to the same cost in the end. If a very detailed research study has to be done, it is not simply a ready knowledge that a board member may have. You require to be going to the field and do the appropriate research. But we should have the capacity and the skills to assess any consultancy and report that's drafted, that's brought to us, so that we can apply our mind and make an appropriate decision on that. Again, the question of the areas of the metro left out, are there any improvements? We hope that areas that fall under single tier governance in the metro areas actually improves services. The metro can, with its economies of scale, provide specialist services, can do proper planning, and as I try to explain, we think it is the better model at the moment to have a metro. But there have been questions now, but why don't you declare a whole district as a metro, as opposed to just the urban area? The view would be is that a whole district, which includes large tracts of rural land, will simply not fit with the requirements of the Act, of the Structures Act, which specifies what are the criteria for a metro municipality, and such would not then be viable in terms of the legal criteria that we have to be applied, and that there would be still local municipalities operating outside metros, but there would be linkages through inter-municipal intergovernmental relations structures or through the provincial structures. The last question was on the district municipalities, the competencies of these. I think this is the focus of the white paper process or review of the white paper on local government. What are the functionality of districts? Are they adding value? Why do we need them? And I think this committee will, I think, still be entertaining a lot of issues pertaining to districts in the foreseeable future. Julia, I've answered your questions, Mr. Mack, on the Western Cape. Yes, Maysburg is closer to Graaf-Reinet than to Beaufort West. Unfortunately, there runs a little provincial boundary between the two. And that we cannot do anything on provincial boundaries. Those are done by Parliament itself. This drafting of VDs and determination of VDs are, again, an IEC competence. They start with the primary blocks, and it's again linked to the census blocks. In the end, we use VDs to build up wards, because no VD in itself would constitute a ward. We use a number of VDs, and therefore we again want to align very close as far as we can with the IEC. So it's a very much again constructing a ward is quite difficult, because we don't want to disrupt the IEC and the census blocks, because they use a very specific determined block. So it's a combination effort, and sometimes we don't get the best result. But we try as far as possible, and we in the past split VDs, try to relocate them, and then we have to go back to the IEC and say, please redetermine your VD. I think I've answered the question on public participation on boundaries. Again, just to reiterate that we're very conscious of the seriousness that communities take boundaries. And we see it too often that we have not been, that difficulties if communities' views are not taken into account. And again, reiterating, we try to move towards stability and not unnecessarily change boundaries. The last question is Section 23 notices.
Yes.
The question was who the M is in terms of the provinces. Let me just get to the slide. I had them listed on the slide. But yes, the request is for honourable members to in their engagements with MECs to also raise this issue. If you look at that slide, it says the Eastern Cape, Gauteng, the Northwest, Limpopo, and the Western Cape. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I must say to you, if I know that these honourable members are itching for more questions,
yeah.
And a lot of them. I myself, but we have this time constraint, and I think I must appeal to members if we can't skip the follow-up questions. But my proposal would be that we really get the demarcation board back in the third term, and maybe for a whole day, because they are still very. I can just maybe give you an example. The one question that I'm sitting with is still the principles of integration in building this new South Africa. You will still find, and I'm not speaking politics, one party will tell you I'm not participating in this by in this ward because I don't appeal to this people. And then it's a group of people that is associated to it because there hasn't been any integration of people. And I think on the economic side, how do we integrate towards the rich and the poor? Because many planning now is ward planning, it's ward-based, community-based. If you have a rich ward and a poor ward, you'll have a better resource in rich wards, and they will have better policing forums and give neighborhood watches and everything. So that whole integration is still a very big concern among our people. But let me say we would like to have you back later, maybe for a whole day, and then we can give members some more chance to engage with the demarcation board. I see I'm on my time. I would like to, from our side, to ask, from the select committee side, to ask the Honorable Roux to thank you. But before that, I would just like Professor Stadler maybe to have your last passing shot.
We really appreciate the opportunity to engage with you and report to you.
We really appreciate the opportunity to report to you, and would welcome a third day with you and discussion, because there are so many issues, just the one that you mentioned now, that's very important before we go into the process of ward delimitation. How do you deal with the issues that you've mentioned? And we would really welcome a further opportunity to be with you, should be invited. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. From our side, on behalf of the colleagues, I would really like to thank Professor Stadler and his team for their presentation today, which was very informative and most enjoyable, and especially the frank and honest way, sir, that you and your team answered the questions. It was really worthwhile and was informative, and we're looking forward to seeing you again. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sir. Members, can I have this 5 minutes leg break?
I think so.
A 5 minute leg break. I hope the MEC will endure with us. I don't allow smoke breaks. I'm much against smoke. Usually the 5 minutes goes on to 10 minutes and more. But thank you very much for coming back. Let me just again
members we are now here to meet and to sit with the MEC of Free State to brief us on intervention in terms of 139B. We have also, in the WIPS meeting this morning, we have spoken about oversight visits that are all stopped temporarily, but when there's interventions, as the Constitution requires us, we as the NCOP also have, and as a committee, have to go there. Let me again welcome our MEC, Honorable Mafeleka, and your departmental head, Local Government and Housing. Let me start with introducing our honorable members, and let me give them the opportunity to introduce them and their provinces. Let me start with the honorable Chris Ntuli.
Hello, Chris Ntuli from KwaZulu-Natal. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Willem Lugu from the Eastern Cape. I'm Dirk van Meewe from the Northern Cape. Daryl Worth for a starter, Free State. Best rugby, best soccer team. Goshi Mokwena from Limpopo.
And Frick van Heerden, we are not from a province, but from a state.
Thank you very much. I'm Honorable Novello Mack. I've been asked by the Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Cheka, from this committee. He's busy with his meeting, Mayor National Leadership, and he then asked me just to stand in for him, MEC. From our side, we have next to me our committee secretary, Mas Manelli. Right at the bottom end, we have a young son and a young lion, the Honorable Mr. Mokwena. And on the right hand side, right at the bottom, the wise man with a white beard, his wisdom, Mr. H. We call him. He looks after us for some logistics and food stuff. And we have the parliamentary monitoring group right behind PNG, also in attendance. And I'm glad to see the board has decided to stay with us. Maybe it's fearful of what is coming next term. to have an insight at least. Let me give it to you, MEC, just to introduce.
Yeah, Chairperson, thank you very much, and also the opportunity, and also to be called down to come and just give a report of what you are doing. As it's been mandated by the Constitution, we have responded solely by writing to you, and the committee want to be informed about all these activities. So my name is M.J. Masaraka. I'm the MEC of Local Government and Housing in the Free State. And I've got my HOD here, Opun Rajukonsan. He's the HOD for the department.
Thank you, MEC. I can't pause seeing that the MEC is also from Free State, that I need to these other Free Staters. We have Rafi Erasmus in Cape Town. And it's a huge difference now with the storm. Well, fortunately, he comes from one state, not from a state within a state. Thank you very much. Let me, without any further, because as we said, we have a time and we have a sitting this afternoon. Let me then give to the MEC just to brief us as committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to maybe inform the committee that this is a decision of putting Mokar under Section 139.1b. It is not a day, as people say, that maybe when we woke up in the morning, we decided to do so. It is just a land fracker with this municipality since last year. So the Mohoga municipality actually consists of the following towns. It is Gathron, Roeville, and Smithfield. So those are the municipalities that comprises one municipality, which is called Mohoga. Its headquarters are in Gathron, next to Stagspring. Now, Jefferson, since last year, we have been having quite a number of problems with the municipality. We need to try to interact with the municipality in trying to sort out their problems. Their problems are twofold. They were either political or administrative. And they will hear when the HOD gets into details, maybe, to explain that. But I must say, this municipality last sat in the council since last year in August. Yes. Mm. Since that day, we've been trying to persuade them to sit. Yes, they will call the meeting, but the meeting will get disrupted. It will not go on. Or either it will be called off for some other reasons that are known to the council. Section Central Committees have also said, but if the council is not functioning, they are not. They also could not function. And Section 57 managers all fired. There's only one Section 57 manager who was then also appointed to be an acting municipal manager. And unfortunately, half of the council, including the DA and the ANC, and the other side, the ANC and the others, one half was respecting her as an acting municipal manager, the other not. So, to be short, you realize that financially it then became a lot of mismanagement of the finances. There was no order in this concern. So we called a meeting in February just to go and talk to them about all this. We found that the rift is so big that they can't work together. And this brought also involvement of the staff. Staff was started getting divided to others, to you on the other. And then on the 14th, we decided and informed them that we have no alternative. Give them 1 month, and if they don't bring their things into order, we have no alternative to do an intervention. And it took them 2 months. They could not do that. Though the minister, as you hear, when they issued the presentation, that could not institute the section 139(1)(a). I think we've done it, though it could not have, but in essence, we tried to do it. We did also send our team to go and assist, and it could not work. Though we could not directly say this is section 139(1)(a). But we believe we did that monitoring intervention that we tried. And on the 14th of May, we then made a submission to the executive and request them to give us the permission to do this intervention. And our resolution number is 60-2008. That the decision was taken by the Executive Council that we do an intervention. And hence we wrote to the Select Committee, to the National, to the Minister. And the Minister has given an approval. And we're here now today, maybe in detail, the HOD to take us through and really say where we are and what we have done, on what issues we have done intervention. Over to you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Thanks, honorable members. I think the MEC has given a preface to our intervention in this municipality. That we did have a meeting with them where in our background we highlight how we attempted to resolve some of the problems. But the problem basically did not start in 2007. In 2005, 2006, the Auditor General had given a very strong audit report around this municipality, such that we agreed to institute a forensic investigation. the primary issue around the forensic investigation was how they were managing their funds through the so-called cash poker system. And that's why on two consecutive years, we want the municipality to attempt to change the passwords on a regular basis, given the fact that we are now becoming aware from the Auditor General's report that one officer in that municipality was able to pass transactions that were supposed to be confirmed and further be authorized finally by the municipal manager. And in those 2 years, we were able then to issue directives to this municipality to try and deal with this matter. So whilst there were issues emanating from the report of our task team, after we have done the forensic investigation working with the Auditor General, we then looked on holistically on the financial administration of this municipality. We also looked at the issues in relation to meetings, convening of council, because this municipality is actually a plenary municipality. They have got a council of 10 members. So in most instances, it is not either an executive type of a municipality or even a collective type of municipality where some of the functions would actually be delegated to the mayor in one or the other to make decisions. So if this council is not meeting, no decisions in relation to that actually affects the overall running of the municipality on a daily basis, because they have to confirm specific decisions as the speaker mayor there. In a plenary, we have a speaker mayor who normally does not get more delegations from council. Council has to meet to make specific decisions. So the meeting of this council brought about serious challenges to this municipality. So the council literally failed then to, on an ongoing basis, to execute their executive obligations as well. Now this had a direct effect on the administrative obligations. In this regard, as the MEC had indicated, there was a political intervention to have the whole council convening. And as he indicated, this council is divided into two, five councillors and five others. So it would mean that even if they petition the speaker to hold a council meeting, the speaker will rely on the four others to ensure that the council meeting would not sit. If the speaker calls a meeting, the other five will ensure that this meeting will not proceed because there won't be a quorum. Because you would only have five councillors in that meeting. If they think that the matter on the item is in favor of the speaker, faction, if I can call it in that way in simpler terms, then the meeting would not sit. If they think that this is in a matter that is in the interest of these other five councillors, the speaker will not call a council meeting. Therefore, it became completely impossible for that council to function and to maintain national standards and meet minimum standards for rendering of services in that particular municipality. And therefore, we had to make specific interventions, having been aware that since August, this municipality has been unable to meet, and as we have indicated, it's a plenary municipality. Therefore, due to their inability to meet, they actually affected even the arrangements in relation to the institution itself. At a time when the council started not to meet, they had contentions in relation to the appointment of three Section 57 managers. The manager for corporate services, who is the only Section 57 manager who is left in that municipality at the moment, was appointed under very difficult circumstances. The speaker had to use a casting vote because there was a tie in relation to the appointment of the very same corporate services manager. The speaker had to use a casting vote to have that manager appointed by council. That section system managers are appointed by council. Now, later on, in February, we had a situation where the council suspended the municipal manager and the CFO, as well as one officer who, as I indicated to the committee, that as early as 2006, we did warn this council that we think there will be a complete maladministration of funds in relation to your cash focus system if there is the override of the system for payment can only be done by one officer, who is just an accountant in that municipality. Because the CFO must override the system, and then the municipal manager must override that system for payment. So either through collusion or maybe through negligence, this has happened that this officer was able to misuse over 1.2 million, and just an accountant, over 1.2 million of that small council money was then misused. Actually paid directly in the bank account of this officer. Because we think that the municipal manager, maybe if he's aware, he used to give his password to this officer or the CFO. Or we are still busy investigating now. We are hoping that it could have been a collusion. That's why they were all suspended. But half of the councillors did not want, finally, this council to institute criminal charges against this officer. They did not even want to finally look and adopt the forensic report of the Auditor General, which we have ourselves commissioned and paid for as a Department of Local Government and Housing. So we experienced this difficulty. Now, in the process of suspension, Chairperson, the contract of the municipal manager also expired. So he fell off automatically as an employee of that council. They had advertised the post of the chief financial officer. This chief financial officer was actually acting, who was in that particular position. He was actually acting in the sense that they paid him out an amount of about 450,000, 500,000. They paid him out for him to take a lower position in that municipality so that they can appoint a chief financial officer. But he kept on acting in that position. There seems to have been no intention to appoint the chief financial officer, but just paid this officer and continued to do his duties normally as a chief financial officer there. Now, then this created a situation that you now have a vacancy of a municipal manager, a vacancy of manager community services, if you look on page 6 there, a vacancy on manager technical services, and a vacancy for the chief financial officer. We were left with one Section 57 manager chairperson, who is this officer who was appointed under serious controversy. Now had to act as the acting municipal manager. That problem again emerged when they were to appoint an acting municipal manager. They had to vote to appoint an acting municipal manager. And this was once more decided by a casting vote by the speaker, because this council is still divided into half. And these political tensions had a direct impact also on the administration of this municipality. We indicate here that on page 7 of our document, Chair, that due to this cash-focused payment system, the municipality is supposed to establish or even implement a proper financial system. A cash-focused system is a system that we use when, in any government department, when we just do an agent payment, very, very agent payment. But they relied on a cash-focused system as their normal system to use for payment. And as I indicated, we did make a directive in the last two financial years because of the risks that were identified by the AG in relation to the reliance on a cash-focused system by a municipality. So we indicate that because of this situation, no segregation of duties, passwords which were supposed to be the only secret for each of these three officers was in the hands of this one officer who was able to redirect funds into his own account. We did warn them in the 2005-2006 financial year that they must reset their passwords, and they should ensure that these passwords are changed on a regular basis, even if possible, on a monthly basis. It is possible for an officer to change a password so that you avoid a situation where they could actually be known by any other person. So we've also looked at the issue of problems that were brought by this current staff that was suspended. It actually meant literally that we were left with the most junior officer in the finances of that municipality, and therefore we had to, part of our intervention was to ensure that we are able to bring in a person appointed by the provincial government to run this municipality, who then also take full charge, and will then we are in the process of finalizing the assistance to this individual in relation to other expertise, especially in relation to finances. Chair, I've already referred on page 8 there on issue of bank accounts and over the overall financial position of this municipality. When they get money for either housing or they get money because they were a support organization themselves, the municipality was established as a support organization itself, so they were also handling people's housing process funds. They were handling MIC funds. They were handling money for clinics for health. And all this money was in the same account where you could easily use the cash focus. Part of our work now with the person that we have appointed there is to do an overall evaluation of and also even a further investigation around the project fund, because they were actually part of this call account and of the municipality, and we had to deal with them, having to deal with updating their income and expenditure cash book, so that we can actually create some reconciliation of this account, especially the project fund. They were, because the only the Section 57 manager was left, they were even unable to hold proper tender committees or in relation to their supply chain management policies. So they were unable even to finish. Whilst in the Free State, we were able to run with speed to deal with bucket eradication. At the moment, they are even unable to finalize their buckets in Ruben because they can't sit. And the more they sit on those funds, the more the MIG fund actually loses value, because we now have to supplement the funds that are available at their disposal. Problems of the creditor position because of the situation that they find themselves, and we have indicated issues in relation on page 9, the chairperson, in relation to the misappropriation of this project funds and the investigation that we are doing now to try and ensure that we secure the MIG funds. We secure money meant for clinics there. We also secure any other money that could actually be a conditional grant from the provincial government. Now we have given tasks to the executive council representative there, or the administrator, to ensure that there would be an expenditure control committee to be able to deal with these matters. We have also then appointed a firm that is going to assist this administrator in relation to the financial recovery processes on page 10, to conduct a full prognosis of the Mohogara local municipality and also to compile the problem statement in relation and consult the National Treasury to finalize the financial recovery services on the formulation and implementation of the financial recovery plan on the findings of the situational analysis report. That's basically what needs to happen there. Now, finally, the Executive Council has resolved, after we have put all these problems at their disposal in relation to non-functioning council, just to meet and make resolutions, the conditions of the staff in that municipality, the financial positions of that municipality itself, then EXCO resolved that we take over this municipality, so that we are able to take almost all functions, legislative functions of, all functions of this municipality, except their function as council to make bylaws, their function to pass rates and taxes, and also their responsibility to adopt a budget. All other functions of that council are now in the responsibility of the administrator who has been appointed to deal with this matter, until such time that the executive council is satisfied that the council and the municipal administration there is in a position to resume their respective functions. The Executive Council further resolved that the intervention should not impede on the Council's obligation to pass legislation, which is bylaws, as I've indicated, approval of the budget, the imposition of rates and other taxes, and the raising of loans. The Executive Council has also resolved that we need to appoint this person who will manage these functions on behalf of the Provincial Executive Council. That individual appointed is a Chief Director for District Services in our department. He has been appointed as the administrator to run this municipality. His overall responsibility is to coordinate our district responsibilities as a department. Therefore, we have appointed him to deal with those responsibilities. That we should finalize the budget and the IDP of that municipality, and then we need also to finalize the financial recovery plan. The Executive Council has also directed that the municipal manager should cooperate with the acting municipal manager there, must give reasonable assistance, actually compelled by law to do so, and that under the supervision of the administrator, who will also become the chairperson of council, when this council is making specific decisions, they must meet at least once a month, so that they are able to discuss with the administrator and to resolve on matters of mutual interest. We have also agreed that the council has remained competent to carry out their legislative function. It is also very critical that we agree on a dispute resolution mechanism, where the Executive Council has resolved that in case there is a dispute between councillors and the EXCO representative or the administrator, the Salga Free State will actually be a first point of call to resolve the dispute. And if their mediation is not helpful, the MEC for local government and housing would then make a decision. And his word would actually be final, as the final arbiter in relation to any matter of dispute that would arise. Obviously, Chairperson, this individual appointed on page 14 there has to give a report on an ongoing basis, on monthly basis to the Executive Council, but also must indicate as to when the municipality would be ready to resume its functions. And if it is ready within that report, this individual must be able to raise those issues in the report to the Executive Council, and the Executive Council would then automatically, then after having satisfied itself with that report, resolve to either to ensure that the municipality is able to resume its functions again, Chairperson. We have indicated that we have given a notice of the intervention to the NCOP, to the minister as well, and that the minister has. We have attached the letter of the minister there, that typed it on small over, where he has given the authority to the MEC to proceed. If the minister did not give us this authorization in 28 days, we were supposed to immediately withdraw from this municipality. So we have received the concurrence of the minister, and we are in this house to plead that we continue to occupy this municipality under these circumstances that we have indicated, and in the next 90 days, if this council indicates to us that we do not have to proceed with this intervention, we will also withdraw. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And the MEC has anything to add?
No.
Thank you. Excuse for me. This is not the Free State, it's somewhere in the Western Cape. This is one of the biggest problems, challenges that we have in the Western Cape, as we, our MEC usually said, mark a lot municipalities. And there's just one clarity before I give the members a chance. I've heard a town council 5-5. Do they vote on party lines, or do they vote on the speaker's lines or the mayor's lines, or?
Chairperson, they vote on the speaker lines and the agency line. And the others that are calling themselves, we are agency, you are protecting the agency, vote against the speaker. There are those that say, the speaker is right. She's also protecting the agency, vote on the speaker line. So they are fighting for ANC, but the DA are part of this, so they've taken another fight. We don't know. But they also say these that are going with the speaker are correct. They will be on this side, on the opposite of the speaker. The DA also fights the speaker, because that gentleman of the DA, the councillor, is on the part of those that are fighting the speaker. So the speaker is having heard, should vote on this side, and have a casting vote to overthrow us. Now, the PSC and the DA, they are on the side. That is why, when there's the time for interview, the PAC, the DA will come to and come and disrupt the interview because they are against the person who was appointed. They are on the opposite side of the speaker.
Thank you, MC. I'll just ask this clarification, not for political, but just to give us a bigger background. I'll give the chance to members. Let me now start from this side, please, members, from Honorable Ntuli, and then we'll, in that order.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'll say, Honorable MSC, it seems as if this intervention is long overdue, if you look at the malfunctioning of this council. But I'll want to pose some few questions so that I'll be able to understand better. I want to find out, you said the AG's report, they got a qualified report in 2005. Was that, because that was before the council. I mean, it means then this trouble started before this council in 2006. What were, it means then during the election there were no changes. Was it the same people or what? Or is the problem with the MM? Because seemingly the MM was there in the previous council, so he passed or she passes to the next one. Just if you can clarify that. And the other one is that whether in Free State, what about the other councils? Have they passed the bylaws, the other municipalities, or is it only this one? What about the others? Are they passing these bylaws? And then, lastly, is the political principle for particularly, I believe it's the ANC which is in charge there. What does it say? I mean, as a province before the government intervention or the executive, what is it doing, the political party? Because councillors are deployed by political parties. Why such a long time not the political party taking action to discipline these people? Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to start where Honorable Ntuli left off. Obviously, it's long overdue that we made the intervention here. What I'd like to know is the moment when it was discovered that this official had stolen R1 million, putting the taxpayers' money into his own account, how much time passed since the discovery of the fraud until there was acted against this official, and why was he not immediately criminally charged for fraud, and up to what stage was he still receiving a salary? Thank you.
Thank you, Ntuli. That was the Honorable Leroux. Honorable Mayor.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I think I ask a question. I don't think it's only for in connection with this municipality. There's one thing that bothers me, I think all of the municipalities over the whole of the country, but this is a good example too, is if you get a municipality and they get a disclaimer report from the Auditor General, I feel there must be a law. If he gets a second disclaimer, something must happen, and the province or somebody must come in there and check why is it that way. Because I think these things are running too long. And, you know, who is suffering the most? It's our poor people outside there. Because there's no money, it's in a rich man's pocket, and they suffer severely. So my question is there anything that you can do? Because I know the Auditor General can't do anything. if you get a disclaimer like this 2-3 times the second year, what can you do about it?
Thank you. For what?
Thanks, Chief. Yeah, the alarm bells have been ringing in Morokari municipality for quite some time. I'd just like to ask, there's a huge reservoir dam that's been built at Smithfield up on the Kopi there. Apparently no water has been pumped into it. I asked the residents, but I don't know whether it falls under DWOF because they don't know the difference. They blame the municipality. There's no water in there. That dam is going to crack if it hasn't already cracked. There's a lot of steel lying around there which has been pilfered. I don't know if this has been included in that extended forensic audit. This is not the only municipality. There's the one, these are very poor municipalities. So the minute something goes wrong on their finances, of course, the whole thing is in disarray. You've also got Naledi next door. That's the vet store from Stadensrus Weppener. Things also aren't too going too well there. I just mentioned these things so we don't have a domino effect there. But intervention is done at an early stage before it develops to the stage where, you know, we have to have a 139. Because it's happening more and more frequently, and I think if intervention could take place earlier, it could be stabilized possibly at an earlier stage than waiting until the whole system sort of collapses. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Khoji Okwena.
Chair, with your permission, can you allow Dr. Van Hedder to come in first? This first setup. I'll come after him, if you don't mind, if it's fine with you.
No, I won't mind, Chair.
Yeah.
Honorable Van Hedder.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's clear to see that the Freedom Front isn't on the council. Okay. Chairperson, I just, maybe I'm mistaken, but if I heard the presentation correctly, it was indicated, I think, by the MEC that the council, or a certain section of the council, did not want to lay a charge against that person. If that is correct, I also see now that the minister, one of the conditions is that the MEC initiates criminal investigation. Mm. But if that is the case, that a section of the council did not want to lay a charge, then they are accomplices. Mm. And that's something that's very serious, Chairperson. And if it is going to be investigated, I think a lesson must be taught to these people. But you can't go on like that. I mean, if Mkhoshi is protecting me and I'm pinching this thing, then he's an accomplice. Or is this a whole committee? Gentlemen, this is a very serious matter, and I just wanted to raise this. If I am correct, if I heard them correct, that they are in the process of the pursuit of justice, they are obstructing the pursuit.
Thank you. And if we turn to the Honourable Mokwena.
Thanks, Chair. Now, the question, Chair, is the role that was played by the department itself, the province, Chair. Because usually these municipalities, there'll be a time where you'll see these warning signs to check how the role that was played by the department. Just to check your involvement then before we're in this crisis now. Because if they were able to detect or adhere to the warning signs, I suspect we wouldn't be where we are now. But secondly, looking at the role that you played in trying to assist them, and they are refusing to be assisted, I wonder why didn't you jump to see the 9C? If people openly defy the department, they said, no, we can't do what you're saying. Why are having these people here who are really not prepared to? Because we might look at these 10 individuals here, but look at people whom they're supposed to serve. We're talking of thousands of people are supposed to be served by these people who are only serving their own personal interests. You know? Forgetting that they are in those positions for the sole purpose of delivering service to our people. Now, they're sitting in those chairs because they want just to be counselors, mayors, whatever, speakers. for their own personal interest. You know? But I want to support Noble and Dooley that it's long overdue. I mean, now, Chairperson, I'm depressed. In fact, I'm very much depressed. I'm depressed. Thanks to the MEC and the department for taking this action, but it's long overdue. Now, the last question, Chair, is that after the intervention, is there any cooperation from these people to the administrator there? Is there any cooperation? Because that's one of the yardsticks we're going to use to check if they're prepared to repent. You know? Are they prepared to repent? But the sorry, Chair, the very last one. In the this thing, you said you will only return power to the municipality when things are in order. Usually, as NCOP, we prefer to be given a specific time, because we want the intervention to go forever. That will be indefinite. We don't want that as well. Because, say, you must assist people immediately after things are back in order, and then you must also have a program to say you are prepared to take them up until this far, you know. But to say we'll the intervention will be lifted when things are fine, to me, that's
forever.
Yeah, because we don't want it. We don't want it. Let's have it. Usually, some provinces will give us 6 months to say, will be there for 6 months. After 6 months, then we'll pull it out. Or if things are not fine within that 6 months, they'll come back to the SOP again to say, we've tried our best in 6 months now, but these guys can't move. Now what then? But to this indefinite intervention, I don't think it goes August well to us here. Thanks, Chair.
Well, thank you very much, members. I think I need to add that usually it is put to 6 months, and if nothing is right, we go and we review. And maybe extend for another 6 months. I just needed to add. I'm just as depressed as you, Honorable Khosi. Yeah. But I'm partly used to some of these things happening. I don't even want to ask what happened to public participation. Is there 10 councillors? Is it a ward system? Is there ward councillors? What happened to what committees is this in place? What happened to report back meetings? So I don't even want to ask. I fear I know what I'm going to hear, but what has happened there? And then what is the people that must be the service must be delivered to? The usual man out in the street, has there no complaints come from the other? That's accepted. Was there no protest from the people, from the normal public, from business, from unions? Has there nothing come, even from Sampu, which is in, or Imatu, which is in the municipality? Was there nothing coming forth from them? Or are these people so humble and just accepting everything that has happened? That is, I think, what I would like to hear. Yeah, I'm also dumbstruck with that it could have gotten so bad. But let me rather give members, give the MEC a chance to respond and maybe give us more clarity. Thank you.
Yeah, just I'll try to answer more, do that more political. Mm-hmm. And then the HOD will come to take another one, but some others are still there. I must say, I think the report says that we said we were going to be there for 90 days, which is 3 months. Also being aware that if the NCOP give us a permission, it is going to go for 6 months. That is where we go to 6 months. We can't go to 6 months without the NCOP permission of 180 days, where you apply to apply your mind. But if you apply it now, then you can go for 6 months. But on the third month, we need to assess ourselves to report to the executive, to report to NCOP and the minister. So that, in fact, after 40 days, the administrator is going to give us a report internally and the executive. The 3 months will give the NCOP to assess and agree whether is there anything that you think you can advise the minister so, so that by the time 6 months or 3 months we go out. It's also not nice to maybe see the municipality. This guy has got his own job that he's doing. I mean, and you know, Free State Molanyana, even the human resource that we have. Now, if you were to take it and pay them more, you understand that we are paying the department of the mandate we never been budgeted for. It is a stress to us. But I must say, another question that I want to abruptly answer is this question. Why do you keep quiet? It started from 2005. I've been appointed as an MEC in this department in 2005. And the first thing I came, I called for the disestablishment of Socarit. We made presentations and national, they stopped us, all of them. I mean, we saw the danger. I mean, it's illegal for a council to run a council with a deficit. 2005, Carib was 5 million. In 2005, when it started, and it was 7 million. It is now 12 million. I said, that's not a council. And then you understand, I must get a go ahead as an MEC, a medical here, by the government, by the minister, then everybody say, whoa, 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 my friend, you're too harsh, give them a chance. So I give them a chance. I'm coming again next week. I'm sure you've received the chairperson has received another letter, section 139, 1B, Karim. I've been saying it, but I mean, you need to work under executive also agreeing to you.
Mm.
Yeah, you know, it's, as I said, I started with Moka, I say, many people think he just had woke up in the morning and decided about it. No. We will tell the story. And Charlie, I'm coming again. We said the story. Now, lady, you remember I put it on a section 106. I put it back again. I mean, I don't ask for permission for sitting section 106. I apply my mind to say, hey, and I have done it again. But you see, there, the municipality still has the power. If I deploy a person to demonstrate that they are refusing, because they have to approve it to the council. You say, this one you don't want him, it's part of the problem. You fake another one outside. This one, now yesterday, last night he phoned me, that night, it was also two groups. But these two groups, they hate, both of them they hate the mayor. So the mayor does not have a fight here. Now they're calling for his head, they want to remove him. I said, but I've taken the power. So they must listen to me. It's me who called the city in there. No other people. He now talks to me, but he refused. He now wants section 139. And they think it's easy to put section 139. It gives us a stress, and it's also stressing us a lot. Two of us, you know, we can't manage this thing. We cannot. Because two months party already, section 106, two on section 139B. It is too much. There are two coming again. Pumelela, you remember the Pumelela.
Mm.
I'm so sad because I'm bound to go back to say that as if I'm not. And many people they think that I'm sitting doing nothing. Okay. Yesterday, one person in an executive council PC meeting of all the regions, they say, I'm not assisting the municipalities because they say this annual report. I mean, section 47 report. I got out of 25, 14. But yesterday when I told them this problem that I have, they accused me again that I'm not assisting. But see, the HOD and his team are doing the benches. There is a report that out of 25, a section 47 report, which checks performance of municipalities, nine of them have not responded to that. So this other story of what I brought in here, I'm just throwing them the dice here because just to put it to say how stressful we are where we are. We are stressful in the first place because we see them happening. But to go back to the question that the HOD will have the role played by the department, I've already mentioned others, I'm sure. The cost of this problem is the municipal manager. Because you understand 2005 is the other term.
Mm.
2006, when this new council comes,
yeah.
They didn't want him. municipal manager, and that's the cause. It is a political problem. So the new teams, you know, the whole new team came. The others were removed and they were wiped off whitewash. So the new teams say, we don't want this guy because he refused, and that's why the whole process started. Your diagnosis is very correct. When you say it is a wonder to her, did all these things, and as a result, all the bylaws, they are refusing to pass quite a number of bylaws. They are refusing because they don't see the importance of them. That's why even today, can still talk a simple bylaw that, you know, in the one suburb, do not slaughter a cattle. But all tradition, we do slaughter. But that bylaw has not been removed. It did it today. It's still there. You know, the councillor sometimes will speak about these bylaws. You know, we've got 1,400 bylaws that we need to repeal in the first stage. Because remember, it was an administration, it was a collapse, it was a black book. So unlike the Northern Cape, you are lucky because they've won. Western Cape had won. So you are easy to make a uniform. With us, it is a digital thing. And they don't understand that. So we've got three laws that must bring together and make one. And it's not easy. Hence the minister decided that let's wait and do once all in all the provinces. But that is hence its own problem. So we haven't done that so far.
Political principle.
No, which one? Oh, sorry. He likes it because now, what about the political party? The political party is also divided into this thing. I mean, politically, you know, even KwaZulu-Natal for that. I get a coalition program now of where it is only one municipality there is one. KwaZulu-Natal has his stronghold. Now, he's been accused. Also, if you are ANC, you destroy that. But this is disregarding him. It's an ANC, MEC. And here the problem is that the ANC is the majority. But unfortunately, they are divided. Because ANC says, we have appointed the mayor. So they listen more to the mayor than this other. See, that's why now the division. That those who support the ANC with the mayor will be this side. Now, those that say no, the ANC is divided in this issue. It took them long, but now they've agreed. That's the reason. At the end, they supported me to push Section 139. They were not accepting all along. Until we do all our internal things to show this fraud that we discovered, and then they are in support now. I can say confidently that that's why I did it. Because I must be supported, because once I will be redeployed, you know, this thing will be dangerous. All of you must tell the lie. If GA doesn't say do this, if a Freedom Fund say the Afrikanerdom is Afrikanerdom, so you must do it. So if you don't do it, you see an Afrikaner. So it's something like that. All of us, all these parties, so we do have this headache at times. Because they all see it, they are at a distance. And you are inside, and you see the problem. So there was a bit of hesitant, but now they are agreeing now. They even say, I must put Section 139C, I refuse it. There's election next year. Why would I get the man to run election this year? Because he says election, I dissolve, and then after 3 months I go to election. It means the election will be in October. Another election is in April. So it will, you know, we won't be good to the people. And there are about 4 municipalities, if I were to put a Section 139C, I'm also careful not to bring this threat onto ourselves and to the IEC. You saw here they are preparing for, they are not preparing anything in between elections. They are now worried about changing the boundaries, and there were quite a number of boundaries that have been affected, especially in the farms, in the country. So we will create a confusion. We are also afraid in doing that. We are careful in getting into that. We have discovered this through our own investigation. They were refusing, yes. I think you elaborate. I'm sure now we are going to charge, to lay charges of criminality here. I don't know how far you might actually will respond to that. And that's the rule. You know, the question of disclaimer is contentious. contested. But it depends how the AG say it's claim on what, you know. Maybe we in the Free State, sometimes we don't feel that good things are done to be the same. And the municipality can be the same about doing well. You see, I wouldn't think that you can get a law where they say, when the AG says it's claim, then we have to punish the municipality. It will be too hard to take to the. Because in the Free State, South Africa told you that our people are happy, we're doing well as a local government. And PMR, we're going to get about 7 awards. So only people, stakeholders, we're doing well. The problem is an in-house problem of the council, which goes out, and we're quickly holding it. But what assists us is the when we put project consolidate, because we identify all those promoting municipalities, put them under project consolidate. That helps us a lot through the DPLG, and because we bring in a lot of expertise. So I wouldn't really encourage a disclaimer to be a punishable offense for any municipality there. I'm sure that they will have answered you. And with them, he responded, I think the word is full if I remember what they were complaining. But this is my brother put down a section 139. They can't work. You know, Smithfield, that dam, they bring the water as it is for the people to go and drink. And you remember the problem in Smithfield. So it will remain. There was one guy, we were paying $300,000 to repair the boreholes there. They refused. We are paying because it's a white person. They refused. But this man says, I've got expertise, I can assist. They say, you know, you're white. You know, no, those are small farms, small towns, you remember. This thing of politics is still hard. Politics are meant for who and who and so on. So they cannot be assisted by white person. So that is the problem with that. And the boreholes have not been corrected up to today. Because I said Echodu will answer about you there. Cooperation of ANC, I spoke about it, I'm sure I've answered it. It was there, not a good cooperation, but now they're cooperating. Because they're serious. They now see the problem. Because we had to go and do investigation and show them. And then the mayor, with us, go and make a presentation. Then at least it was agreed that was intervened. The different hearing I've responded to you. Chairperson, all your comments and all that. We are sitting a tumble. I said, actually, I said that the man comes for a particular problem. He's not paying that. One of them is the pension fund. They take the pension fund money and use it for other things or into their account. Because people are taking us to court now because they say, my husband passed away. 6 months, I have not been getting my money. But they were not paying. They were not contributing in any way. Therefore, that person will never get the money. Because the council was not contributing. Not contributing their share, not even contributing the deduction that is made from the worker. I'm afraid how serious that. So you just wanted to report that. So I've got heaps and heaps of SAMU letters there. And they've marched. They play toy. But remember that you are 3 spheres of government. Sometimes these councillors, when they want to be stubborn to me, they reminded me that, hey, we are a sphere of government with our own authority. Don't come and tell us. You go nowhere. And this IGR, we are trying to sneak it to the back. But it's difficult because this question of a sphere of government, they say they can do it alive. So if they want to do a thing, they'll pass a resolution and do it. You can't stop it, even with an MEC. You can't stop it. You do it. You only stop it when it's a crisis. And that's where they say, no, MEC, come. We've got a problem now. And that's why one of them, two groups in Wokar in February, they say, MEC, intervene. And please, Section 139C, dissolve the council. They were saying, like other members were saying, because they think it's easy to dissolve. It's not that as easy as like that. You know, we need to do other things. So maybe on the issue, I forgot something.
I think the chairperson, the
just a few issues here to indicate the final decision by government to intervene in this municipality was informed by a report that was developed by our task team. This task team, before we actually instituted a forensic investigation, we had a task team which was assisting the municipality to put systems in place. But there are areas where we were not getting any cooperation from the municipality. I indicated earlier that the MEC had to give a directive in terms of the law of some specific issues that the municipality was to do. We also supported them to develop their financial statements in 2 consecutive years. That's why we at a later stage were aware that we needed to bring in the forensic investigation, because we were suspicious of the fact that of the issues that we discovered even when we were assisting in terms of the development of the compilation of their financial statements. At the present moment, there seems to be cooperation that the Executive Council rep is getting, or the administrator. They have a council meeting on the 27th. He will preside on that meeting so that they are able to pass the budget and to also adopt their IDP. Because on the 1st of July, if they don't have a budget adopted, it will be a problem for them to use the resources of council. So we're looking at what would then be the reaction when they meet formally in a council meeting to adopt the IDP and the budget, which is the competency that we have left in their hands as a council. So we will then be able also to judge basically their cooperation there. Because at the moment, only the speaker is a full-time councillor who actually works on an ongoing basis, and with our administrator and the acting municipal manager. And other councillors basically engage in other activities like consultations in their wards on an ongoing basis, accompanied by the administrator. Because we are also avoiding a situation where they call formal council or what meetings, only for them to continue to create problems. We want also even to arrest the political problems in that area from a council point of view. They can do it from a party point of view outside council, but not from a council point of view. So the official, as the MEC has indicated, the administrator's first responsibility that the administrator has was to do a prognosis and then to also finally lay a charge with the police, which the council was unable to do, because they were to meet, make a resolution, and lay criminal charges with the police. That work is being attended to by the administrator. So because this official is on suspension, council is still paying the salary. Basically, we will also be considering further reports after the administrator has given us that report as to having laid a criminal charge and maybe this individual arrested, as to what are other options that council will consider in relation to this official. I think those are just the issues that the MEC did not respond to. In general, we dealt with basically with a lot of these issues. Honourable Member West, we will look as to whether this issue of an incomplete project would actually also form a basis for our further investigation, because we have given a holistic mandate to the administrator in relation to the overall administration of that municipality, and reports to us, the department, and to the Executive Council on a monthly basis, which then assists us to make specific decisions in relation to this work. We are giving the supporting teams, finance supporting teams, and the infrastructure supporting teams to this administrator to make it possible for him to be able to carry out his responsibilities. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. We're doing good on time. 9:59. But I think it's very clear that there's a big problem.
What is wrong?
No, 10:01.
10:01. Then mine is wrong. But I think it's very clear. I think the process our committee usually follows is we go there, We speak to counselors, speak to unions, we speak to the community. We usually give some advice, we come back, we speak to the department, and then we usually inform accordingly what we find. Members, I don't think I can actually ask for any more questions. I think it was very clear, but very put out. Maybe I should just ask the MEC to give us a last word and honor them and comrade them truly, the honorable comrade, to just thank the MEC on our behalf. Thank you.
No, Chairperson, thank you very much for participating of all our members. And really, there's one overwhelming word that is this is long overdue.
Mm-hmm.
It means that it really, we are happy to see that our intervention is greatly supported by the SLEC committee. We'll just await for the final thing to go and then see for yourself what you find situation being a little bit normal now. We hope that you have gone there before when it was terrible, but I think we are satisfied, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. I would like to thank the MEC and the HOD from Free State. MEC, I think you have to be brave enough to intervene, not to say you are going to be stretched and all that, because we are seeing that there are a lot of problems at a local level. Once you intervene, it highlights the problem there. But if you don't intervene because you think it's going to stretch you, the problem will be there. I think it's better to stretch so that us here, we can see the need of assisting the municipalities. I remember in a debate I was talking to Fantermes to say, when it's 139, it's a good sign that the province is taking action to correct what is not there. We must not look as if it's bad to intervene. I was asking, as we have said in KwaZulu-Natal, they were refusing that the minister, the MEC must not intervene. Then I said, but the intention of intervening is to assist you.
Mm.
To do the correct thing, and now you turn and say it means then it's about power. If a person does not want intervention, he wants to cling on power even if things are not correct. So we would encourage you and the department to intervene. I would be pleased if you intervene wherever they don't perform. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Before I adjourn, there's some not some choose lunch. I'm a standing chairperson. Maybe a standing chairperson has a small budget. But you can enjoy members and everything. Thank you. The meeting is adjourned.
Okay.
Maybe chairperson, also a meeting to reassure the members. We are doing intervention. There are 11 municipalities. In them, there's Mangaung is there, my child, the bigger municipality.
Yes.
So we are doing it, but thank you for the support. That must be.
Is that a standing budget there? We mustn't do a standing chamber.
I'm going to come to the chamber.
You're kidding me.